Hello there, James McGrath.
I'm back. We're back. It's awesome. How are you doing? It's great to see you. Let me tell you.
I'm good.
This is the worst idea ever. 5 o'clock in the morning, my time? I hate you.
It was your idea. It was your idea. I'm not even going to take credit for it.
what time is it there in Kangaroo Land?
Well, so here's the thing. Typically when we do this, as you know, I'm usually on my second cup of coffee, right?
Yeah.
Glass of Shiraz in hand.
What did I say? You smooth talking motorboating son of a bitch.
Do you know the other thing? Doing it at this time, it actually helps me because you don't sound quite as sort of chocolatey smooth as you typically would.
Oh, really? Yeah, that's because... No, Dude, it's 5 o'clock in the morning. I got out of bed about 10 minutes ago, having been up several times in the night with little G-bomb, little Gracie. And I have not yet had coffee. So this...
Why did you do this to yourself? Who knows what's going to happen
in this episode? Mate, I'll tell you why. I've been thinking about you pretty much every day for a month now, thinking, are we ever going to record a podcast again? Because we just... The time zones, I mean, like, our regular slot...
Yeah, and I just need to quickly say to all of you listening, first of all, hey, welcome. So great to have you along. But second of all, James thinking about me every day, it has gotten weird. There's days where I just get a message like, what are you doing? What are you wearing? It's just odd. It's getting uncomfortable.
All I want is that naked selfie in reply, and you just refuse to bite. You refuse to bite.
Just check out my OnlyFans page.
Oh, good God. Let's hope that doesn't exist. Little Hang on, white I thought... stood next to little green.
Oh, it's so good to be back. Welcome to Curb and Canyon. What have you been up to, good sir? You've been travelling, you've been around. We've got a lot to catch up on today. New cars in the fleet, road trips, new videos, graphite blue 991s. I mean, where do we start?
Well, actually, let's start with the graphite blue 991. So last we spoke of that, I was about a week away from going to the Works reunion event in Florida. With a couple of friends, and I found this car on.
I remember.
Yeah, I found this car on Auto Trader and thought, well, you know, actually that doesn't sound like it's too far away from this place I'm going to in Florida. Maybe I'll check it out. So when I got there, having seen all of these amazing cars for the weekend, I actually was in the mood to buy a car. I was really in the mood to buy a car, and I was like, you know what? If I take an extra few days driving this back, and I get home, and the wife's not happy, I actually really just don't care right now. So I go back to Auto Trader, and of course, it's not in whatever town, Florida. It's in whatever town, Wyoming or California. It's like literally on the other side of the country. You know, like there's every state has a Springfield, and there is a Hollywood, Florida, as well as a Hollywood, California. I mean, it was like, what was it called? It might have actually been Orlando, Florida, and it was Orlando, Texas. Whatever it was, it wasn't in fucking Florida. So I didn't get to see the car, and I went home a little bit miffed. So having listened to Michael Wooten from Michael's Motors and Meats on YouTube and Instagram talk about his brand new Cayenne and how he's going to work on it, and he's picking it up in a few days' time, and he's going to do a safari build, I just started looking for Cayennes. I was like, you know what? My truck's dead to me now. And then I found one. And then I thought, I wonder how difficult it is to sell a truck that you lease. And thinking it was never going to happen, like quite literally within 24 hours, I put it online. It sold.
Yeah.
And there I am flying to Indianapolis to buy a Cayenne.
Surprising. Oh, which, I mean, that's congratulations on the Cayenne.
You. Thank you.
It's amazing. If I'm honest, as a lead in to sharing the news that you bought a Cayenne, leading in with I was going to buy a Graphite Blue 991.2, but instead decided to buy a what year Cayenne?
Who knows? It's no, wait a minute. No, like I do know.
2019 just, or something?
Oh no, it's not that fancy. It's a 2014, and it's a Cayenne S.
2014.
And it's lovely.
Yeah, I mean,
it's so nice.
Yeah, and we're doing Tale of the Dragon in that, are we?
No, but no, we're not. You know, it's so.
Do you know what? It looks lovely. I'm just busting your chops. It looks fantastic. I'm very impressed, and I do like a Cayenne, as we would say here in Australia.
Cayenne. Oh yeah. Yeah, it is. It's really nice. But you know, I went from owning a $55,000, 20,000 mile truck with all this, you know, which very nice, even though it was a Chevy and slow, to owning a $17,000, 160,000 mile Cayenne. But I don't care. It's great. It's my kiddie car. It's awesome. But you know, having said all of that though, apart from the curb rash, it looks like my grandmother was the first owner, and she was driving well into her 80s.
Right for you, given the way you drive, that's appropriate.
She was driving well into her 80s, and she was about 20 years too late in turning over the keys. The amount of curb rash that I've got on these beautiful 20-inch or whatever they are, 19-inch turbo rims is unbelievable. But apart from that, the paintwork is like immaculate. The interior is immaculate. It's got all the options I wanted. It's even got the bum coolers. It's got the panoramic roof. It's got the clock. It's got the air suspension. It's got the three different suspension settings, sport button. You know, it's awesome. I love it. I'm like, why didn't I do this a couple of years ago instead of buying that stupid truck? Well, the truck was good, to be fair. It was all right.
Yeah, I mean, you got it, you know, America, you got to
yeah, man.
Do the truck thing, right? And so where was this sourced from? How did you get it home? Was it a road trip home? What happened?
Yeah, it was Auto Trader. I think I bought every Porsche now I've found, apart from the 991, I found on Auto Trader. And
right.
You know, I've basically done all my research online, got the VIN, looked it up, blah, 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 looked at the service history, did the Carfax, high-res photos. You take a bit of a gamble, of course, spending $500 on a flight to fly, you know, 2 hours west or south, wherever it was.
Where was it?
Indianapolis, so right smack bang in the middle of the country.
Yep.
But yeah, it was pretty cool. On the I think it was the Wednesday I was talking to the dealer. Thursday morning, at like this time, I was flying to Indianapolis. I got to the dealership, picked it up, a couple of hours there, and then drove it home. And 10 hours later, I was back in bed. It was just tremendous. But dude, get this. So having done this now a couple of times, flown to, you know, California or Chicago or wherever to pick up a car, you know, I've really tried to hone, like, you know, the management of my expectations, because no car is perfect. I think if I was shopping in my hometown for the first time looking for a Porsche, I probably wouldn't pull the trigger on anything that even like had anything, you know, a million miles away from looking like curb rash or looking like a tiny little scratch or imperfection. I think I'd be really super picky. But once you've got skin in the game and you're there, you know, you
think, that's it. If you've flown, that's it. You're accepting some stuff you wouldn't accept otherwise.
You know, you're like, okay, you know, all right, yeah, there's a bit of curb rash here, which I didn't see on the photos. And it, you know, kind of looks like someone's taken a pickaxe to one of the wheels and there's like a big chip out of the side. But you know, I'll deal with that. I've never had anything happen to me though, like happened this time with the Cayenne. I rock up, it's outside of a Porsche dealership. It's not just like any old dealership. I actually bought it from Porsche. And, you know, they've checked it out. They were the ones that sold it originally, and it's only had one owner. So I know it's been really well taken care of. But I turn up, I look at it, love it. The guy's like, hey, do you want to take it out for a spin? I'm like, yeah, sure, okay. And then I'll come back and take a look at it. The first thing I do is take off my coat and go to open the rear passenger door behind the driver's seat so I can put my coat and my bag in the back seat. The handle comes off. the handle comes off in my hand, and I look at the guy, and he's like, oh my god, is this really happening? And I was like, yeah, just hold on to that for me, will you? And then I got in the car and took it out for a spin, and as I was driving it, I'm like, the handle just came off. Matt, what are you doing? What's going to happen now? The engine's going to blow up. But thankfully, the test drive went just fine, and I got back, and he was like, oh, I'm really sorry. This is really embarrassing. Let me go and talk to the tech and see if we can get it sorted.
This never usually happens.
And yeah, this has never happened before. And, you know, and that was one of those moments when I was like, you know, if I was back in Minnesota, I'd probably walk away from this car.
Yeah, of course.
But actually, you know what? It's just a handle. I know that it's just like a little latch that's come loose. Sure. They're going to fix it for me. And, you know, screw it. I haven't thought about it since. And actually, having driven now 1,000 miles in it back from Indianapolis and around the Twin Cities, it's perfect. It drives like a brand new car. It's awesome. Nothing's fallen off it just yet. I haven't taken it to my Porsche dealership in Minneapolis and got John and the guys to take a look at it, but I will. So you could say I've taken a bit of a gamble, and maybe not everyone wants to buy cars like that, but man, that 2 days of like searching for a car, getting on a plane, picking it up, driving it home. And even though the road from Indianapolis to Minnesota is basically one straight line for 10 hours.
Man,
it was so much fun. I loved it. Like, okay, well, what am I going to buy next? I need more space in my garage.
And so let me get this straight though. You'd been away for when you went to the works reunion, you'd been away for 10 days. Is that right?
No, because actually I was planning to. So my 996 was entered into the competition. It was planning on, you know, I'd paid for it to be judged and all that sort of stuff. So it was going to be at the event.
But then they realized it was a 996?
Well, funnily enough, I was the only 996 entrant. I was the only 996 entrant. Yeah. There were thousands of cars there. Well, hundreds of cars there. There were probably 1,000 in total. And I'll talk about that in a second. But so there I am. I've been planning this with Jay and Michael and Chris for months. The week before the event is when I was starting to leave. You know, it's like a 3-day drive to get there. I wanted to chill out for a bit. And I was going to be 3 days back. And I was going to, you know, take an elongated route. So, yeah, it would have been about 7 or 8 days that I was going to be on the road. The Monday morning, I'm due to leave. I wake up, open up the door, and there's like a foot of snow on the floor. And so I'm like, well, okay, I'm not going to be driving today. Thankfully, it was a relatively warm day. So most of the snow melted during that Monday. So I thought, all right, Tuesday, okay, I'm going to drive Tuesday, and I'll just cannonball it. And I'm going to do it in 2 days instead of 3 days. Wake up Tuesday morning, look at the news. There is an ice storm that's quite literally following the path I would have been driving from the Midwest over to the East Coast for the next 2 or 3 days. And I was like, am I going to drive a 20-year-old 996 that I've worked on myself through an ice storm for 2 or 3 days? Just no.
Hell yeah.
No. Hell yeah.
So hold on. So how long then? And we're going to get to the works reunion. But how long were you actually away then? Because where I'm leading with this is you were away for how many days? Short answer.
4, 3.
Okay, that's not so bad. So then, because I was going to say, because you're away for 10 days and then you get home and you say, hey, Ruthie, guess what? Jumping on a plane tomorrow to go buy a Cayenne. I'll see you sometime.
I'll see you soon, my love. Yeah.
She's a good lady.
She is. She's awesome. You can't deny it. But no, and there's no but. She's absolutely awesome. She's incredible. She gets her own weekends off, and she's had a weekend or two off since work's reunion, and they're all very well deserved. But yeah, that's pretty good. Pick up, go, come back. So
that's amazing. And what mods are we planning? What auto amateur style mods are we doing? So tell me about your shopping cart on Suncoast. I imagine just overflowing, and you're getting emails saying, "You left this behind."
Yeah, James McGraw, you left $7,000 worth of material in your car for your $15,000 Cayenne. You know what? I don't know. I don't know. All the way back, I was thinking. So this is black on black, black exterior, black interior. It's a blank canvas in many respects for the old auto amateur mods, because the deviated stitching opportunities are endless, right? You can do anything with black, yellow, red, green, blue. I've thought about a yellow sports chrono clock face, which I've already pulled the trigger on. Yellow instrument cluster dials, at least the middle one. Yellow deviated seat belts. And then the new wheel that I've bought, the GTS wheel, which wasn't available, I think, for the first gen 958, but was available in the 991. I bought that, and so that's ready to go on if I can figure out how to disconnect the battery under the driver's chair, which is a ball ache. But you know what? I got into the garage and I started pulling out the sports chrono clock the other day, and I was getting ready to put the yellow face on. And I just kind of lost the will to make the change, because the car's so kind of perfect the way it is right now. And at the same time, I've got Chris in my ear. Who, have you seen his new name on Instagram? It's now Carbon Fiber Chris. Because he's now got, I mean, yeah, he is Carbon Fiber Chris. I mean, that's the only way to refer to him now. It's no longer Turbo Chris. He keeps sending me bloody GT3s and GT3 Tourings. And so I kind of feel like every dollar spent on the Cayenne is a dollar that I'm not going to be spending on, you know, the 996 or my future 991.2 or 992. So I don't know. I think, as much as I'm excited to have a blank canvas and to make a whole bunch of videos about fiddling with the Cayenne, I don't know. I don't think I'm going to go there. I think it's just going to be a daily. I think so. Having said that.
Well, you know, because I was about to ask you, which body kit are you going to put on it?
I know, right?
Which aftermarket body kit are you going to put on? Because I'm actually looking. I'm on Google right now looking.
Oh, you are.
There are some criminal body kits available for Cayennes.
But let's
against design.
Let's think about, you know, safari builds. We've talked about this before. I think it was the last episode or the one before we were talking about the Dakar. It's the new thing. Dude, down at Works Reunion, there was a safari build, first generation Cayenne, second generation Cayenne, a Safari Build 997.2, a Safari Build McCann. I think there might have even been a Safari Build Panamera. It seems to be catching on. I don't know whether I've just never been exposed to the Safari Build crew. And I know that they've always been the sort of off-road 911, the Rothmans, etc. But it's like everybody's on Safari mad. Michael Wooten is certainly on the safari train. He's already
pulled off the rear bumper.
Pulling off the rear bumper. He's pulling off the front bumper. He's going to put a roof rack on. I think he's already got a lift.
It's true. I mean, you lift. Yeah, and you need somewhere to mount your shotguns. So
exactly. When you're out there in the bush, Mississippi or whatever it is. And we did actually see a first-gen Cayenne on the beach in black that had a bunch of off-road kind of safari stuff on. And it's on my Instagram. It looked awesome. It really did look awesome. So I've been a little bit tempted to go safari build, but I mean, you should see the neighborhood I live in Minnesota. I mean, driving a truck around this neighborhood was one thing. Driving a safari-built Kayette, just...
Because it's like, sort of, it's kind of Pleasantville, right? Like, it's...
yeah, and hey, where was Pleasantville?
It's almost a gated community.
Dude, where was Pleasantville filmed? Or where was it set? Minnesota. It was actually set in Minnesota. It's funny you should say that. Nothing ever happened.
I feel like I'm talking
Minnesota.
To Tobey Maguire.
So the other shopping cart that I've had, my Cayenne, has about $4,000 or $5,000 worth of off-road gear in. So you can get I've been looking at what's called a Baja front bumper. I know. Dude, there's a Baja front bumper, which you can put four LED lights on. There's one that goes on the top of the window where you can put another few LED lights, which then allows you to put a roof rack on where you can either put like one of those, you know, ski boxes or whatever that allows you to pack your life in.
You're doing a lot of skiing?
Yeah, in the flatlands of Minnesota, absolutely every day. I can put like, you know, a big spare wheel on. And then there's also the kit for the back where you can put the swing out, mounting rack for a spare wheel, and then another sort of Baja something bullshit rear bumper.
Isn't there a spare wheel just in the luggage area? There's one already there, right?
Yeah, but now you can have two. No, think about it.
Where
you can
you
put
going
one on the back.
You're going to need two.
You could put one. Hey, America? Have you seen how big this place is? The Mall of America? I mean, it's in the name, America, the Mall of America. Anything could happen there, Andy. But you could get a spare wheel on the roof, a spare wheel on the back, and then there is a spare wheel already in the trunk, you know, underneath the lift up. So basically, you've got three shots to escape the elephants and the rhinos if you get stuck, you know.
So it's sort of a post-apocalyptic Last of Us vehicle.
It is, absolutely. And that's what I told you about the Dakar. Porsche thinking 100 years in the future.
Yeah.
We're all going to need some kind of safari version of the cars that we drive today if we are going to get our groceries.
You are a true innovator and early adopter. There's no doubt you and every other moron buying jacking them up at the moment and posting them on Instagram. Why doesn't anybody like this? And think about, just imagine poor Doris, who owned that car for God knows how many years, just drove it to church and back on Sundays where they had lovely tall curbs that she could scrape the rims on. Imagine her horror at what you plan to turn into. And tell me, are we talking an orange decal down the side? Are we talking your big...
Probably. I mean, of course.
Absolutely. Or yellow to match your sport chrono clock, right?
No. Well, you see, here's the thing. Germany, Andy, has mountains. Did you know that? I knew that. Everyone knows that. Germany's got mountains. So I figured I could get a...
Hold on. I don't appreciate the condescending tone.
hey, look, it's 5 a.m. This is how I talk. So how about getting a decal that looks like a silhouette of whatever mountain range is near Stuttgart? And getting that in like a Porsche red, gold, and kind of matte black, and then having that across the roof or on the side. No, dude, I am not touching this Cayenne. I am not spending a penny on this Cayenne.
I was about to say, sorry, what was that? Because I was falling asleep for a second there. yeah, well, but you know what? Great. What a great car.
Yeah,
great daily.
You know, it's a daily. But look, check this out. And I swear I was not going to give these guys a shout out. All right, in this podcast, I was not going to give the Known Works guys a shout out.
Come on,
dude. What? Who sells their Cayenne on YouTube the day that I drive home with mine?
I'm not willing to say.
Lee. Motherfucking Sibley. I'm going to have to expletive that out with a beep. But at least he sold it. He sold his Cayenne that he's had for like nearly 2 years now, the day I buy mine. What's that about? Is it not cool enough for him now? Like, he knew that I had a Cayenne, but...
Anyway,
don't listen to 911 people.
How insecure are you that suddenly you're crying? Wait, but I bought mine and now you sold yours? Did you email him? And... Dude, what's going on?
Life's not fair. And...
I'm not sure about this time slot for us. Because, you know, in the afternoon, you're punchy and you're sort of a little bit angry because you've had a day to get pissed off. I don't know.
Now I'm just a little needy, pre-caffeine needy.
Yeah, needy. Yeah, it's needy.
All right, well, look, enough about me. Like a Star Wars fan waiting for the prequels, your latest video dropped the other day, and I was excited like a fanboy. Mate, where have you been? And stop making videos that are so high quality because it's making my life difficult.
Well, it's funny that you went with the prequels that are universally disappointing in their outcome. At least you didn't say like a fanboy waiting for the Book of Boba Fett.
There was a lot of excitement, Andy, in 1998 when it was announced. There was a lot of excitement.
No, I remember it well. Do you know what I had? So I sat on the footage from my Tasmania rally for months. And to be honest with you, because I'd done a really shoddy job with the audio on that video, I just used the GoPro Media Mod. I basically decided with that video, okay, I'm mostly just going to use GoPros. I'm going to talk while I'm in the car, and I'm just going to use the GoPro Media Mod microphone. I think that should keep me out of trouble. And then when I started editing the video, I was really disappointed by the audio, so I just sat on it. I thought, I can't release this. I can't bring myself to do it. But then, of course, all of my friends were saying, dude, when are we getting a video from Tasmania or what?
Come on.
I was like, so I just started cutting it. My Al from Flat Six Affair did a little. He cut a little video, and I'm like, "Oh, you don't, hey,
yeah, exactly.
The moving. You got me on the still images, dude. But when it gets to the moving images, that's my domain. You don't come, don't come creeping into my space. Don't blow up my spot. You know what I'm
getting
saying?
Too big for his shoes, that lad.
He is. I know. I've got to knock him down a peg or two. No, so he did this really cool little video, and I was like, "Damn it! All right, that's it. I've just got to do it." So I just went flat out at it for a couple of days, just made peace with the bad audio and hoped that the audience would be okay with it, which seemingly they were. I mean, I think we've had the conversation before. Rally videos never get huge amount of traction on my channel, at least.
And you make them for you, right? You make them for you and your friends. 100%. Went on the trip.
Yeah, yeah. And actually, even with that in mind, one of the things I did was I thought, you know what? I'm making it for me and my friends. I'll make it as long as I feel like it needs to be to tell the stories I want to tell. It's way longer than anything I would usually do, but who cares? So that was fun. And it just got me motivated again. And I thought, that's it. I'm just gonna get this GT4 video done. And it was the easiest shoot I've ever done. And I think, you know, the last big review film I'd done was my mate Anthony's 997.
Oh yeah.
A year ago. And for that one, you know, we did a nighttime shoot. We did tracking shots on the freeway. I went nuts on that one. And then I had some equipment issues that meant I filmed the in-car piece three times. And so it was, you know, drive an hour out to the hills, film it, get it home, and then have a problem and then have to go and do it again. So I was just really over it by the end of all that. So this time I just made sure I was really, really smart about my gear, really had thought through what I wanted to talk about. I got it done in one take. I shot the beauty sequences in 20 minutes.
Nice.
And I was done. And I edited it in like 2 days. Bam. It was out the door. And I'm like, this is, if I can do videos like this, then I can get back to doing them. So I took it took a slightly different approach from what I would usually take, but I still felt like the quality was, you know, what I hope the audience has come to expect from a Last Rasp video. So, but dude, it was actually absolutely. Really, oh, that's like, good.
Yeah, totally. It was another Andy Gold classic.
Yeah, well, I'll take that. You know, it's pretty hard to get it wrong when you're filming exterior shots in a gorgeous sunrise with a black GT4. I mean, it just like, you know, you couldn't. I could have shot that on a first generation iPhone and it would have looked amazing. Like,
yeah,
just it, right. The car that day. Just yeah,
it's like you can take.
You know, go. No, you guys.
No.
Well, I was just going to say, it was good, though. It was good to have had a little bit of time with the car, you know, because usually when I do the reviews, it's like, hey, I've got this car for the weekend. And because I'd had the car for 8 months, I've done a lot of driving in it. It meant I could, again, I could be a little bit particular about the content that I was delivering and about what I wanted to say about it. And so I think it just helped with the storytelling, helped me get through it a lot quicker.
Yeah.
So look, there's some cars I've got lined up, and some cars I'm trying to get lined up. And if I can do some special cars, I just want to try and actually get some special cars on the channel. Because if I can have someone come out, you know, we spend 2 hours and it's done and they take their car back. I mean, it's a different, obviously, then it's really more about first impressions rather than a detailed review. But I still figure that's interesting.
Are you going to make me ask the question?
What's that?
Which cars? What have you got lined up? You got a Volvo Estate.
Second generation Cayenne. so there's a, I don't want to blow up my spot, but there is an X, there's a former racing car.
Oh, okay. So you're like, we're not talking about, you know, a nice pretty driver at Cars and Coffee. We're talking about a car. We're talking about a car that people are going to be interested in.
Yeah, yeah. This is a former cup car that I've spoken with the owner, with a friend of mine, a good mate, and so that one will be coming. But then, look, there's a few other people that I've reached out to. I'm waiting on words back, but who have some, they've got some heavy hitting stuff. So I'm not promising anything yet because, you know, I totally get that people don't necessarily want to throw me the keys to their.
Who are these people?
Whatever.
Give me their phone number. Whatever. I will make it happen, Andy. Let's get this shit done.
All right. We'll do that off the air. But no, so I do. So if I can get access to some good stuff. But anyway, I'm going to do one. I think I'm probably filming this weekend. But that'll be just a kind of local piece with Little Green. But yeah, I'm back.
Oh, Little Green. Well, before we talk about Little Green, I just want you to know that the deviated stitching did not go unnoticed in that GT4 video. There was so much of it in so many frames. It made me really happy.
I'm sure I told you that when I was looking at buying that car, the deviated stitching was a mark against for me. I felt really conflicted about it. And, you know, my friend PJ had just bought a GT4 with the, I guess it's crayon or white deviated stitching, which looks so classy. And I just thought, that is just superb. It doesn't look like it's trying to be Darth Vader's road car. It just looks, I just loved it. But it was funny because, you know, I flew to Sydney with my son to collect the GT4. And when I opened the door and I saw it, I loved it instantly. Mm. And you know, it's funny because, and you know, I say this in the video and it was actually true. I was finishing shooting with the GT4 and my plan was to drive to my friend Dale's place where I have one car in storage, and I was going to swap the GT4 for the 964, and I didn't want to. I'm so ashamed to say it, but I didn't want to give it back. The GT4 has really gotten under my skin. It is it's such a amazing little straddle between modern, insanely capable, yet super, super fun, super engaging, and at times you feel like you're driving an old car, even though it's a modern car. And there were actually moments in that video where I just laugh, and it's not put on. Like, I'm just cacking myself laughing at the sound of it, the acceleration, all of it. It just makes you giggle.
For me to say it, I was speaking to somebody the other day, and they made a comment like the GT4 is actually the best car Porsche has ever made, but they're not willing to say it because it'll take down the 911. And you know, maybe they're right. I mean, everybody seems to go that extra step further for the GT4 when they talk about just how good it is and how much better than just the base Cayman it is. And, you know, it's next level in so many different ways. I wish I could fit in the fucking thing, but
can you not though? Because I'm not, maybe it's just me. Cause look, I'm 6 foot. So I've obviously, you've got a good few inches on me. That's what she said. But contrary to what the video looks like, because my hair looks really tall in the video, I'm not anywhere near touching the ceiling, and I have plenty of room back that I could slide the seat back further. But you've tried to get in one, right? You've tried to fit in one.
Not actually technically a GT4, but a 718.
But like a 98, a not okay, 718. Yeah, fine.
Yeah, 718.
If you can't fit in that.
718, 981. And it's not the width is fine, the headroom is fine, the seat is fine, but it's the knee room between the door and the wheel and the dash and the center console. I mean, just it was it's a clown car for someone like me, absolute clown car.
Do you know, I did find it took me a while to get the position right in that car. Now it is incredible. I feel like I'm just enveloped in the whole thing. It's sort of, you feel very connected to it. But it took me a while to get it right because initially I had exactly the problem you're referring to where I do actually like to sit somewhat close to the wheel. Not quite racing driver close, but I don't want to be outstretched. I want to have elbows bent and stuff. And so for me initially to get to that position, my knees were bent up too much. And it wasn't till I actually moved the seat back and then telescoped the wheel out that let me have my legs a lot further forward.
Okay.
But then the steering wheel in the right position. It does. I found on the rally, and I thought about mentioning this in the video, but it was too long already. It does have, I find, my left knee kind of rubs against the center console a little bit sometimes, and it gets, sometimes it's just like a bit of hard plastic or whatever, and you're like, oh, that's uncomfortable. But, you may be right. Maybe you couldn't fit in one. But they're a good thing. I'd be interested to see. My friend is getting a 718 GTS 4-liter. And that's a car that I'm really interested to see because I feel like that is a it's a GT4 almost, and in some ways probably makes even more sense if you're not going to track it, for driving in the twisties and stuff like that. And what an amazing engine. And with that, with that mid-engine platform, I think that'll be an incredible car.
So my friend Michael, the 718 I was talking about, that's the GTS trim, brand new in whatever the navy blue kind of color is at the moment for the
Gentian blue.
Oh my God. Yeah. Gentian blue.
That is an amazing color.
Honestly, it didn't do too much for me online on the configurator, but seeing it in person. Same.
I agree.
Amazing. Yeah, I would gorgeous. I would definitely get that color if I was going to get a, If I like blue, if I wanted any color, that would be the one. That's really nice.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. I think it's an amazing color. And actually, I know a guy who has a 992 GT3 manual in Gentian blue with the what's the wheel color? The gold.
Aurum? Oh, the Aurum. Yeah.
Something like that. And that color combo is just incredible. Absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
Although, interestingly, that car is for sale. And I reached out to him and said, hey, what gives? You're selling it. And he's missing the back seat, apparently.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I don't know. I mean, I assume maybe he's got kids and he wants to be able to put his kids in the back, perhaps. But... And so we're sort of talking about a turbo or something, and I was like, well, that's not exactly a bad alternative.
I know, right?
But, yeah, that GT3 was incredible. It's one of the nicest-looking cars I've seen.
So, video of the week. Can we talk about video of the week?
Yeah, and do you know what? I've got to give a little special mention. I have been working on a TV commercial for a different car brand as part of my real life, my day job. And we worked with a local director named Jolyon Watkins, who is, I'm not sure he'd agree with me saying this, but I feel like he's the Jeff Swart of the Australian automotive TV commercial industry, without Jeff's racing experience, mind you. And he created a video for Porsche featuring the Taycan. And it's a collaboration with Atari. And it's a Taycan. Really? It's two Taycans playing Pong. It's crazy. No, it's the most wild looking thing ever. And it actually just dropped, I think, yesterday. And he'd been telling me about it while we're on set filming this other TV commercial. So shout out to Jolyon. And that piece is really, really cool. But no, this video of the week this week. Do you want to talk about it or do you want me to? Because you probably haven't watched it, right?
No, I have actually watched it. Honestly, I have, which is why I bring it up, because it was an excellent video. I watched at least the first 30 seconds and was like, okay, yeah, this looks pretty good.
It's only like 3 minutes long.
No, I did. I watched the whole thing. And to be honest, I don't know too much about the Super Cup thing. It's not anything that I really tracked as a kid. I'm aware of the cars. I'm watching, you know, that fella sat in his garage with like four of them behind him. And my goodness, I'm jealous. But what a great video. I mean, I did want to ask, actually, was this produced by like a YouTuber? This actually looks like it was produced by a full blown kind of TV production crew. I'm not sure
Well, it does, but it's like some of these videos. So let me tell you, it's the story of a guy named Mark Sumpter, and he owns a 964 RS, and then he also owns an ex Porsche Super Cup 964, and we'll talk about the Super Cup in a second. But it's been produced by an auto filmmaker by the name of Adam Tate, and he's got an auto film production company called Stoked Up. Now, I don't think they're not like some TV commercial producing mob. I think get the impression maybe it's Adam and someone else. Who knows? But so, yes, there's definitely been some production chops brought into play on this, no doubt. There's some beautiful drone work, for example. They've shot footage. It looks like, is it the Cliffs of Dover right at the end? There's like like the White Cliffs of Dover. So just gorgeous scenery, and you've got this ruby stone 964 RS and then this former Super Cup 964 with all the race livery and everything on it, driving together on this windy road with just epic, you know, green grass all around. It was just gorgeous. It's just stunning.
Really gorgeous. Plus, I also loved, I mean, just for me, one of the hallmarks of that sort of professional touch on videos like that is how they just set up the interview. the way the lighting was, the way he was sat in front of the cars, and the way they kept on cutting back and forwards and like out and in. It was like top dollar production for an amateur looking at it like me, you know different, but it was so good. So good.
No, it's beautifully done. And so Porsche Super Cup, I mean, if you ever want to have a laugh at Porsche Motorsport, Porsche Super Cup, look it up on YouTube, because it is. So it was introduced as, I think this is right, as a support category to F1 back in 90 or 91. And they had all these people lining up. They had people like Mika Hakkinen driving in Monaco, and his car, the very famous white 964 with the Tag Heuer livery, that is just one of my favorite cars of all time. But when you watch the race footage, these guys were mad, just mad. This is one race. I think it's Hockenheim, and there's two cars dicing for the lead. They are literally launching airborne over curbs and like just this insane win at all costs approach to motor racing that just you'd never see anything like it. And it, you know, I think it was probably the precursor to, you know, what is now the Carrera Cup and all of these other feeder series for Porsche Motorsport. But, you know, the cars were not, they weren't particularly different from a road going RS. You know, they weren't super high horsepower. They were just lightweight. They ended up having, by the second year of the series, they were running bigger wheels, the 18-inch speed lines and stuff like that. But they're basically just an up-spec RS. And, yeah, it's just a – yeah, the footage – I'll share some on our Insta, because some of the footage is just amazing. It's unreal. And so this video, as I say, we'll link it in we'll link it on Instagram as the video of the week. But it is well worth a look.
Yeah, I think there's some footage cut in where you see a couple of still shots, and there's a car off the ground, slightly on its side, going over a chicane, and it looked like the driver was like, you know what, actually, just screw this, I'm going straight.
So that is from the video of that is just what I was talking about. It's on YouTube, and these two drivers just keep swapping the lead, and both.
Yeah.
It's almost like every time they get to that chicane, whoever's behind kind of says, "Well, fuck you, you jumped over it before. I'm going to jump further. Watch this." You know, it's like they've got the Knight Rider turbo boost, and they just it's unreal.
And to be a Porsche enthusiast and own a car like that, you know, we're hearing about this guy's experience of being a kid and growing up, and he was exposed to that. He went to that. He was there watching that in the early 90s, and now he owns one. You know, that's just phenomenal.
How incredible is that?
Yeah.
And actually, my mate Trev, his car, so he has this GT3 cup car, and it raced in tarmac rallies in Australia, but also in, I think the category was called Nations Cup. Trev's probably groaning, going, "Oh my God, Andy, it's not called that." But I'm pretty sure it was. And so it raced against Ferraris and I don't know what else would have been in the field, maybe Audis at the time. So in the early 2000s, you know, in this sort of sports car category that probably would have run as a support category for like the V8 supercars, you know, which would be the biggest motorsport category in Australia. And he's now got that car, and it's just so cool. So cool to be able to drive something with that kind of heritage. You know, I just think it's awesome.
So would it be the Tag Heuer livery car for you if you were going to pick a car from that kind of era?
Dude, every day. I have on my Instagram feed, there is way long time ago, when I fit the car with the BBS, I actually mocked up a reversed out version of that Tag Heuer livery to sit on a green car. and it looked and in the mock-up it looked incredible. I've always and actually someone there's a dude on Instagram who had a forest green metallic 964 Targa, and he ended up taking that idea and executing it. And it looked really, really cool. So it's the kind of thing I've thought about doing for a rally. It would be amazing, but it wouldn't be cheap to do. And
it'd
cost a couple of grand, I reckon. And then I'd probably be over it in 2 weeks and want it gone.
It's a shame that the decals and the liveries cost so much, because they are the type of thing that I would actually be quite interested in throwing on for a couple of weeks or a couple of months and then taking it off again. But if you've got to eat a couple of $1,000 every time you want to do it, I mean,
you can cheat though. So my mate Gerard on quite a few of our rallies, or two of them at least, he's done a simple decal kit. So he did one on his orange 72 Targa, which was, he just had a meatball, some shell decals, kind of a classic orange 911 racing decal kit. So not much to it, really, but it just looked great and it didn't cost him all that much. And then when we did Tasmania last year, he was in his 964 and he just did a simple, he had a Blaupunkt along the lower rock cover, a big Michelin one sort of on the rear deck, couple of shell ones and some Bilsteins or something maybe, and it just made the car look like a rally car, and it probably cost him a couple of $100, and it looks like I've got photos of it on Instagram, and it just, it's not like it's a full wrap or an amazing full kind of decal kit, but it just gives the car a certain, oh okay, it's a bit different, what's going on there, I want, you know, what I mean,
certain je ne sais quoi.
It's a certain je ne sais quoi. That's it. A certain chutzpah.
So you're going to be making some car videos coming up, hopefully. What about Little Green? Yeah, how's Little Green doing? I worry about Little Green. I know you say you're never going to sell him, but come on. How is he?
Okay, so we did a drive on Sunday morning, and I had Little Green back, having made my video on the GT4. And we took off on this drive, and I said to everyone, I organized it, and I said, do you know what? This weekend, I'm not going to share maps. I won't set up a route. We'll just decide where we're going. And we all know these roads, bold, right?
Bold move, my friend.
Well, you always assume that we all know these roads because we drive them so often. You'd be amazed how many in our group will drive those roads but still not know where to go if they don't have a map. So we started off and I said, listen, I'll lead out because I know the beginning of our route has evolved a bit over the past 12 months. So it's not necessarily familiar to everybody. So I was leading at the beginning, but I was in Little Green and I had some of the quick guys behind me and I thought, I'm going to need to adjust back to Little Green, having been driving the GT4 for a while now. So once we got to a section where I knew everyone would know where they were going, I pulled over and let some of the quick cars pass me and then joined back in kind of mid-pack. And the first few corners at speed, I thought maybe my suspension was broken or...
Oh, really?
I thought... This feels terrible. The car's sliding all over the place.
What's going on?
It's broken. I'm going to have to pull over and put the car on a tow truck and get towed home. And I thought, I'll just keep driving it for a while. And then I just realized, no, it's just, it doesn't have the immediate kind of throw you sideways front end grip that the GT4 has, you know. It's got this sort of progressive, predictable understeer, but I just gradually got back into it and got comfortable again. And I was following, my mate Kale in his 718 GT4 and PJ in his blue 981 GT4. And I just thought, all right, I'm going to try and stick with these guys. And After a little while, I just got, it all just clicked for me again.
Yeah,
and it's a very different driving experience. You work harder because the you have to do a lot more work.
Yeah.
But Dude, it is amazing. And this is actually what I'm going to make a video about is, can a car that is 30 plus years old still actually cut it as an enthusiast performance car when you put it up against, you know, some of the modern stuff? And it is amazing how capable they are. You do need to make modifications to them, and I think that's more about geometry and chassis setup than anything else. It's not so much about horsepower and that sort of stuff. Yeah. But then, yeah, once we got to some of the later twisties that day, I was on it. I felt very comfortable again chasing GT4s, having GT4s behind me, and felt like I wasn't holding people up. I was pulling away from people at times. And, you know, always when you drive with a group of friends, you have moments where for a little while, maybe the person in front of you is slowing you down a little bit, and which is fine. And then suddenly for a little while, you can't keep up with them. And then same with the person behind you. It's like for a while you're dropping them and then suddenly they're back and you're like, oh, geez, I'm slowing them down, you know, and you get into a rhythm and you're going great. And then suddenly you kind of lose your rhythm or you lose focus for a minute. And so I was experiencing all of that. But no, that car is amazing. It blows my mind how good it is. And with my Alpine Range Rally coming up in 1 month.
Oh.
It was my intention to take the GT4, but I am considering taking Little Green. I think I'll still land on the GT4 because I've driven that rally now 7 times and every time bar one has been in the 964, so it would be good to do it in the GT4.
Yeah, yeah. I know what you mean, though. I mean, even just yesterday I took the 996 out because we had a nice clear day. I haven't driven that car in, I don't know, 2 or 3 months, I guess now. And since then I've, you know, driven a truck and a Panamera and somebody else's 911 and now my Cayenne, all much newer platforms. And to get back into the 996 is that for the first, you know, mile or two, just sort of readjusting, okay, you know, the steering's harder and, you know, I'm in manual, not an automatic, but, I picked it up almost immediately. And by the time I was home, I was like, I am never selling this car. This car is amazing. 100%. I love it. It's so good.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, and it's funny because I think what happened to me was that the GT4, I've said before, was an adjustment for me. For whatever reason, 911s have actually always felt quite natural. And I know the rear engine thing is supposed to be a real kind of head fuck, but for me, it wasn't that. It's not that I didn't have to learn to drive it. Of course I did. My gosh. But it just always felt sort of right. And the GT4, by comparison, the way it rotates in a corner, which is incredible, took some getting used to. And I think over the last 6 or so weeks, driving it as much as I have been, I think I did get really used to it. And so getting back in Little Green, I think it was the first time that the 911-ness of a 911 actually shocked me and didn't feel as natural as it had. That's it. So I just took a bit of recalibration, let's say.
You need to get them in the same garage, mate, and then you can just pick and choose them day to day. You need to have that conversation with Kath. It's going to be a difficult one, but it's in your best interests. Not hers.
No, don't even. I had the conversation with someone the other day and they're like, well, it sounds like you're going to keep the GT4. So just commit and put a lift in. So that's...
Ooh.
Which is not as easy as it sounds because I would need to actually cut a cavity into the ceiling. Yeah. Or I potentially have to cut a cavity just into one section of the ceiling to make sure that I had enough clearance because I don't officially have enough clearance. I actually think that with a 911 and a GT4, I think I would be okay, but all of the manufacturers demand a certain minimum clearance. There's that. And also because my garage is quite narrow, it's a two-car garage, if I have a four-post or two-post lift, it means I can't then put a car in the middle of the garage to work on it or to detail it. And, you know, because I've got a big post in the middle of the garage. And, you know, just last weekend, I detailed Little Green. And actually, I'm sure I've mentioned them before, and you know, I want sponsorship from them. Bowden's Own Car Care Products. What an incredible brand. They have this polish called Butte Beads, and it is just as a polish, a wax, as a finisher, it is a beautiful product that's so easy to apply, but the shine and the hydrophobic nature of it is nuts. You should see Little Green right now. It looks like a mirror. It's nuts.
Is this an Australian brand?
Yeah, it is. It is. They're okay. Just incredible. But yes, yeah, so to have the free plug, to have the posts in the middle of my garage would really just be a bit limiting. So,
dude, single post left. The post goes on the wall, and you lift it up. You lift it down.
Is it what the post is mounted to the wall?
No, it's mounted to the floor.
Mounted to the floor, right.
It's next to the wall, and the post is basically, you know, sort of where the handle of the passenger door is, and you drive it on, and it goes up and down.
I know.
To be fair, though, I
need to look into it.
If you're struggling for height, I'm guessing the closer you get to the wall, the less height you're going to have, unless you've got a flat roof garage. I'm not sure.
No, that's right. So it's a pitched roof. So here's the thing. I imagine that depending on the beams inside the ceiling, that I would only actually need a very small section cut out, right? Because it's literally just at, and this is if I need it done at all. It's just where the roof of whichever car would be on top peaks. So that's only going to be like a foot wide. Do you know what I mean? So
yeah.
I think it would be doable.
The simple answer is staring you in the face, mate. The wife's car goes on the road.
No, because here's the other thing, right? We've got, so my daughter now has a car. So our gorgeous house, which we love, and the front of it's beautiful with a beautiful landscape garden, now has my Jeep on the driveway and my daughter's car parked on the street, and actually half the time my Jeep parked on the street. So it looks like a used car yard. So I don't want to I don't want to hide or have to store another car out the front of the house.
Yeah. I've got quite a few years to worry about that, but I have thought, okay, well, I've got my two cars, Ruthie's car, and then we've got three kids. What is that going to look like?
Yeah.
It's going to be like airport parking.
Well, it's just, you just tell the kids to move out. That's what I'm doing.
Sling your hook, kids.
That's it, kids. Your wife, your mum and I want to go traveling, so you're out of here.
Well, look, Andy, I don't know about you, but I need coffee.
Speaking of out of here.
You probably need to go to bed. What time is it there, by the way?
It's 10 p.m. I mean, other than my AirPods just doing that blub, 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 blub noise of running out of batteries. It's always the right one that drops out first. I'm good. Although we have, do you know, I'm surprised you haven't been out of here. My wife and daughter are sitting in our living room watching Kath and Kim, and look it up on YouTube, folks. And because they're trying to look after our Labrador, our 11-month-old Labrador, who just had an operation this week. He had the snip.
Choco got the snip.
And he's not talking to me at the moment. We're not on good terms. He's not forgiven me yet.
Well, I hope Choco's knackers feel better soon. And we'll do he's another got pod no soon. Knackers, mate.
Yeah, indeed. I'll see you in another 6 months, eh?
All right. And thanks to everybody for listening and tuning in and bearing with us as we take our time to get these pods out. But we're not going anywhere.
No, that's it. And it's not through a lack of desire to do it. The truth is, I think life and time zones just so often get in the way for us both, and we're probably more disappointed than you guys when we can't get to it. But bear with us, because we love doing this, and we love getting the comments from you all, and love the fact that you tune in and listen. It actually really means a lot to us. So please tune in, give us a review on iTunes or anywhere else you want to review us, and we'll see you on the next one.
Cheers.